Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Usually we try to keep things pretty clean around here. You know, we talk about tech, history, psychology. But today we are rolling up our sleeves and getting our hands dirty. Metaphorically, at least.
At least.
Because if we actually touched the subject matter of today's documents, we'd probably need a hazmat suit.
That is a very fair assessment. We are looking at a stack of documents centered on the work of Bob Rice, a renewable energy consultant, and a company called EarthCare. And to put it delicately, the topic is challenging organic waste streams.
Challenging organic waste streams. That is the corporate euphemism of the century.
It really is.
We're talking about manure. We're talking about heavy agricultural runoff. The stuff that nobody wants to think about, let alone deal with.
It's the unglamorous underbelly of agriculture, for sure. But here's the thing. The scale of this challenging waste is massive. It's a logistical nightmare, a biological hazard, and a financial drain. And what caught my eye in these documents is that Bob Rice isn't trying to just manage it. He's trying to fundamentally change the physics of how a farm operates.
Right, and that's where we have to start. Because there's a quote right at the top of the material. It's like their mission statement, and I had to read it twice.
Another one.
It says, "Making the solution available to solve the problem, not bringing the problem to the solution."
It sounds a bit like a riddle, doesn't it?
It does. But when you actually dig into the operational details provided here, that sentence basically condemns the entire way we currently handle trash.
It really does. Think about the traditional model. We call it waste management, but it's really just waste relocation.
Waste relocation.
Yeah.
You have a problem, say, a massive pile of dairy manure. What do? You load it onto a truck. You burn diesel fuel to haul that heavy, wet raw material down a highway to a landfill or some centralized plant. You are physically dragging the problem to a distant solution.
And the source material highlights a huge risk with that model that I hadn't really considered. I mean, I hate being stuck behind a manure truck because of the smell, but the documents explicitly link transportation to disease and contamination.
This is the mobile vector concept, and it's critical. When you transport raw waste, you aren't just moving matter. You're moving biology. You are moving pathogens.
So if Farm A has an outbreak of something nasty like E. coli or even something like avian flu, and they truck their waste 50 miles away,
they are potentially exposing every mile of that road and the destination to that pathogen. The truck spills, it leaks, or even just the tires tracking it into the next facility.
Wow.
The source material lists minimize and eliminate road transportation of unprocessed byproducts as a primary objective. Mm. It's not just about saving gas money. It's about biosecurity. It's quarantine.
So Bob Rice's approach is the decentralized model, making the solution available to solve the problem. That means bringing the machine to the manure.
Exactly. You drop the technology, the gasifiers, the dryers right there on the farm. You process the waste behind the gate. It never hits the highway until it's already been sterilized and turned into something else.
Okay, so let's talk about that something else, because this is where the alchemy comes in. The documents describe a system involving biomass and gasification waste-to-energy systems. Now, I hear waste-to-energy, and I think incinerator. I think giant smokestacks burning trash.
And that is the misconception the industry fights every day. There's a massive chemical difference between incineration and gasification.
Walk me through it. Because if I light a pile of manure on fire, isn't that just burning?
If you light it on fire in an open field, yes. That's combustion. Mm. You're using oxygen to burn the material down to ash, and you're releasing all that carbon smoke into the air. It's messy. It's dirty.
Right.
Gasification is different because it happens in a low oxygen environment. Mm. You aren't burning it. You are baking it.
Baking it, like a pressure cooker.
Yeah. Similar idea. You heat the biomass to incredibly high temperatures, but because you starve it of oxygen, it doesn't just burst into flames. Instead, it undergoes pyrolysis.
Pyrolysis.
The material thermally decomposes. It releases a synthetic gas syngas, which you can capture.
And that gas is the fuel.
Precisely. You feed that gas directly into a generator to produce electricity or heat.
Yeah.
That's where the provide sustainable renewable energy objective comes from. You're powering the farm with the ghost of its own waste.
Okay, so we get energy out of the gas, but what happens to the solid stuff? Because if we aren't burning it to ash, there has to be something left over.
That is the magic trick. Since you didn't burn the carbon away with oxygen, the carbon structure remains intact. You're left with a skeletal carbon-rich material. The documents call this ecochar.
EcoChar, and they are really pushing this as a product, not just a byproduct. Objective number four is to produce a marketable and usable char product.
Marketable is the key word. In an incinerator, the ash is a liability. You have to pay to dump it. In a gasifier, the EcoChar is an asset. You can sell it.
But what is it? I mean, is it just fancy charcoal briquettes?
Think of it closer to a Brita filter than a barbecue briquette. Because of that high heat baking process, the EcoChar is incredibly porous. If you looked at it under a microscope, it looks like a sponge. It has a massive surface area.
And that sponge structure is why the source lists so many different uses for it?
Correct. It's a physical trap. The documents list soil remediation as a primary use. When you mix this into the ground, that sponge structure holds onto water and nutrients that would otherwise wash away. It's like installing a battery in the soil to hold energy for the plants.
It also mentions water purification.
Same principle. That porous carbon structure loves to grab onto heavy metals and toxins. It binds them. It's what we call adsorption. So you can use it to clean up runoff before it hits a stream.
And odor and ammonia elimination. That seems like a big one for a farm.
Huge. Ammonia is terrible for livestock respiratory health.
Mm.
If you spread EcoChar in the barn, it absorbs that ammonia. It literally cleans the air.
Now, there's one use listed here that made me pause. It has a little asterisk next to it. It says, if certified, possibly a food supplement for animals, feeding the charcoal back to the cows.
It sounds strange, doesn't it? But this is actually a frontier in agricultural science right now. The idea is that a small amount of biochar in the diet can help digestion and crucially reduce methane emissions.
Methane emissions from cow burps.
From cow burps, a major source of greenhouse gases.
So the charcoal absorbs the gas in the cow's stomach.
That's the theory. But notice how careful the document is. It says, if certified. Bob Rice and his team are being very responsible here. They aren't saying, go feed this to your herd tomorrow. They are acknowledging the regulatory hurdles, but the potential is there.
It really paints a picture of this stuff being a Swiss Army knife. You fix the soil, you clean the water, you stop the smell.
And you do it all with material that was previously a biohazard. Remember the safety claims in objective number five. Contamination-free, E. coli-free, pathogen-free.
That brings us back to the heat, right?
Yes. The gasification process gets so hot, we're talking over 1,000 degrees Fahrenheit often, that nothing biological survives.
Yeah.
You are sterilizing the waste.
Which is a perfect segue to the other side of this operation, because not everything goes into the gasifier, right? The documents make a distinction.
Right.
There's objective number six. Produce contamination-free manure that has been dried but not gasified.
This is the bedding solution. And honestly, if I'm a dairy farmer looking at this sheet, the EcoChar is cool, but the bedding solution is what makes me sign the check.
Explain that, because to the layperson, dried manure does not sound like premium bedding. I'm thinking of straw or wood shavings.
Think about the economics of a dairy farm. You have hundreds of cows. They need a soft, dry place to lay down or they get sick. Typically, you buy truckloads of sawdust or sand. You pay for the material. You pay for the shipping. You store it.
It's a constant operational cost.
It's a massive bleed on the budget. And then when it's dirty, you pay to haul it away. What the system proposes is a closed loop. You take the wet manure, you run it through the drying equipment using excess heat from the system, and you bake it until it is dry, fluffy, and sterile.
And because it's been heated, it's safe.
Exactly. The document reiterates pathogen-free.
Mm.
So you take this sterile, dried organic matter, and you put it right back under the cows. You stop buying sawdust. You stop paying for disposal.
That is the circular economy concept in action.
It really is. It's like a space station. You recycle everything. The waste becomes the input.
There's a logistical point in the source material regarding this drying process that I wanted to unpack. It says, due to the drying procedure, a higher volume of manure is realized when transported.
Right. This is about density and water weight.
Because raw manure is mostly water.
Raw manure is a sludge. It's incredibly heavy and messy. If you have to transport it, say, to spread it on a field as fertilizer, you're mostly paying to ship water. And you're limited by weight limits on the roads.
So if you dry it out first,
you remove the water weight. Suddenly, a truck that could only carry, say, 10 tons of sludge can carry 10 tons of nutrient-dense dry fertilizer. You might be moving three times the actual nutrient value in a single trip.
So fewer trips, less gas, less wear and tear on the roads.
And again, bringing you back to safety, if that truck crashes, you spill a pile of dry, sterile dirt. You don't spill a river of raw sewage. The environmental risk profile drops to near zero.
It seems like every road in this document leads back to safety and efficiency, but there's a little section near the bottom that throws a curveball. It mentions hemp byproducts waste disposal.
Yes, the hemp angle. This is fascinating because it shows that this technology isn't just for the traditional dairy or poultry farm.
Why is hemp specifically mentioned? Is it particularly hard to get rid of?
It is notoriously difficult. Hemp is a fibrous plant. That's why we use it for rope and textiles. The stalks are tough, stringy, and they don't break down easily in a compost pile. They clog up traditional machinery.
So it fits the definition of a challenging organic waste stream.
Perfectly. And the hemp industry has exploded in the last 5 years. But the infrastructure to handle the waste hasn't caught up.
Mm-hmm.
You have these massive piles of biomass just sitting around.
And the document connects this to regenerative agriculture with an exclamation point.
That connects the dots. Regenerative ag is all about building soil health. If you can take that tough hemp waste, gasify it into biochar, and put it back into the hemp fields, you are sequestering carbon. You are putting the carbon back in the ground instead of letting it rot and release methane or CO2.
It's closing the loop again.
It is. And it positions Bob Rice and EarthCare not just as waste disposal guys, but as partners in the regenerative movement. It's a very smart strategic alignment.
So let's zoom out. We've covered the tech, the bedding, the char, and the hemp. But I want to look at the primary objectives list as a whole. There are 7 of them. And when you read them in order, it feels like a roadmap to a completely different kind of industry.
It does. Look at objective number 1. Reduce byproducts sent to landfill to 0.
0? That is a bold number. Usually companies say reduce by 50% or minimize. They are saying 0 landfill.
It is ambitious.
Mm-hmm.
But if you follow the logic of the system, it's mathematically possible.
Yeah.
If the wet waste becomes clean water and dry bedding, and the solid waste becomes energy and ecochar, what's left to throw away?
Nothing.
Nothing. The waste has effectively vanished. It's been converted.
And that leads to the financial argument. We talked about the costs of sawdust and trucking, but the document mentions Bob Rice's role is to provide an environmental cost-saving long-term solution.
That phrase is crucial. Cost-saving. For a long time, going green was viewed as a luxury tax. You did it for PR, but it cost you money. This model flips that. You do it to save your business from bankruptcy.
Because operating margins on farms they're razor thin.
Exactly. If you can eliminate your electric bill by making your own power, eliminate your bedding bill by drying manure, and create a new revenue stream by selling ecochar, you aren't just helping the planet. You are fortifying your business against the market.
It makes sustainability a side effect of profitability.
Which is the only way it scales. You can't rely on altruism to change a global industry. You have to rely on the ledger.
I want to circle back to the expert in the room, Bob Rice. The document emphasizes his experience with new and used equipment. Why is the use part important?
It points to pragmatism. A brand new, custom-built gasification plant is expensive. By dealing in used equipment, retrofitting existing machinery, he's lowering the barrier to entry. He's making the tech accessible to smaller operations, not just the mega corporations.
It fits the making the solution available motto.
It does.
It's about getting the tools into the hands of the people with the shovels.
Precisely. It's a very practical, boots-on-the-ground approach.
Hmm.
This isn't theoretical science happening in a lab at MIT. This is happening in Beavertown, PA.
That really struck me, too. The contact info at the bottom, Beavertown, it feels very grounded. It reminds you that this revolution is happening in the mud, in the fields, in rural America.
That is where the real innovation and sustainability often happens. It's born out of necessity. I have too much manure, and I have no money for sawdust. How do I fix this?
So we've gone from a conversation that started with challenging organic waste, which we now know is a polite way of saying giant piles of poop.
Yeah.
And we've arrived at a vision of a farm that is energy independent, carbon negative, and zero waste.
It's a remarkable journey for a pile of waste. It challenges the very definition of the word waste.
That is what I'm taking away from this. In nature, there is no landfill, is there?
No. In nature, the output of one system is always the input of another. A fallen tree becomes soil. Animal waste becomes fertilizer. Humans broke that cycle by creating trash that doesn't fit anywhere. Plastics, toxins, or just concentrating organic waste until it becomes toxic.
And technologies like this gasification system are essentially our attempt to hotwire the cycle back together.
That is a beautiful way to put it. We are using engineering to reestablish the circle of life, if you will.
Yep. So as we wrap up this deep dive, I want to leave the listener with a thought. We've been talking about farms and hemp and manure, But the core philosophy here, making the solution available to solve the problem, not bringing the problem to the solution, that feels like it applies to more than just agriculture.
It absolutely does. It's a systems thinking approach.
Think about your own life or your own business. How often do we try to haul the problem away? We procrastinate, we delegate, we try to move the issue somewhere else.
Instead of building a system to process it right where we are.
Exactly. If Bob Rice can look at a pile of hazardous waste and see clean energy and water filters, what are we looking at in our own lives that we've mislabeled as trash?
What's the challenging organic waste in your workflow that's actually a resource waiting for a gasifier?
That is a question. Maybe the problem isn't the problem. Maybe it's just a lack of the right processing equipment.
I like that.
Thanks for getting your hands dirty with us today. It was a fascinating trip through the digestive system of the agricultural world.
Always a pleasure to dig in.
We'll catch you on the next deep dive. Stay curious, and maybe look at that trash can a little differently today.